Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Dressing gown on, microphone plugged in, Jamie in Croston.
Check.
Even though it's Eccleston. Jack in Lancaster.
Check.
Mel in Kansas.
Check.
It must be time for the box set pod. Welcome. Thank you. That's a new beginning there. What do you think, guys?
Yeah, it was all right.
Snazzy. I think we'll keep that now then. Welcome this evening.
That response is what you were looking for from that new opening?
Any kind of audio reaction is always a positive. Now, tonight we're going to talk about the box set The Keepers, which is a new series on Netflix. And it's a rather serious subject, but we'll get to that. Let's first of all have a summary catch up. We've just been chatting to Jack off air about his life, relationships, and painting his wall. He's painted 3 walls out of 4, and now can't be arsed continuing finishing it off. Not planning on being an entrepreneur, then, Jack? Are you?
Well, I would actually like to own my own hostel one day, but the way things are going, that's looking a long, long way off right now.
Is that an ambition of yours, to own your own hostel?
I would absolutely love to own my own hostel, yeah. And a nice, warm European country. Nice little hostel, little bar area. Love it.
Jack, you can't even paint 4 walls without giving up.
Yeah, well, I'll hire someone in to... Well, the other thing that I've found as well is I didn't put any... You know, you're supposed to put sheets down on the carpets when you're painting. Mm-hmm. I've not done any of that.
What an idiot.
That's my whole room... Yeah, I know.
This is a nightmare.
So your carpet's now white as well?
Basically, yeah.
Yeah,
Good Lord, if there weren't enough stains in that room already. And Mel in Kansas, you might be able to hear birds singing in the background. Mel has had her window open and a train might go past. A lot like if you've been to Disney World, Main Street, USA. That's how I imagine it in my mind.
Yes. The birds are sitting on the windowsill waiting for me to invite them in to clean the house.
That's right. And the ice cream
just
seller.
Just like Cinderella.
Yeah, the ice cream seller is waving at you outside, just next to the hat shop. Well, good morning there, Mel. No, what you'd call you Melissa, wouldn't he?
Probably. He would probably be proper. Or
no,
Miss Melissa.
Miss Melissa. Good morning, Miss Melissa. Can I get you a chocolate chip cookie? Okay, Jamie's in Eccleston.
This is
all right,
weird
look,
house.
Forget
this is
it. Weird. Who's watched The Keepers? Jamie, how much have you watched?
2
episodes of The Keepers. Mel and Jack, you've both watched 1. Is that correct?
Just 1, yeah.
1 episode, and I have watched the entire series. Now then, Jamie, have we got any other news to deal with before we get into what is going to be quite a heavy subject? Anything else? Any other business to deal with?
Well, there's some new content on Netflix that's just come on, Glow, starring Marc Maron and Alison Brie, which we're going to be doing in a couple of weeks, I believe.
Yes,
that's the plan.
Oh, I have already watched every episode of Glow.
Oh, me too. I'm so mad I'm not going to be here.
Yeah, we can't say anything. But
No.
Yeah.
Anyway. But yeah, it's exciting. The Game of Thrones returns in a month's time for...
God, sort your Wi-Fi out. Just move house. This is getting ridiculous.
I've just moved.
Move again.
Come on.
Why have you moved there? It's like...
Why didn't you test the Wi-Fi before you moved?
It's like the frigging Middle Ages. What's going on?
I don't know. It's not me. It's
phone someone. Phone whoever it is. Richard Branson, Rupert Murdoch. Ring them.
It's Rupert. It's Rupert.
Rupert. Give Rupert a ring.
If I can get through.
All right.
So, yeah, Game of Thrones is back next month. The new trailer, I'm going to pop that up on the website. It's a brilliant trailer. Gives nothing away, but teases so much. for season 7, the penultimate season of Game of Thrones. I can't wait for that to come out. And yeah, that's the main news at the moment. Nothing else too huge going on in the world of TV.
Okay, but seriously, if you can manage to watch one episode of Glow before we review it, which will be what, next week? This is this time next week?
So the 18th.
The 18th. So, I mean, just do. It'd be an interesting one to see what Jack thinks of, actually, because it's another one that's of an 80s style. And when we did Stranger Things, Jack, being born after the 80s, wasn't as enamoured with it. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see. Let's get on to The Keepers. Netflix latest docuseries tackles the unsolved murder of Kathy Sesnick, who was a nun in Catholic high school in Baltimore. She was a teacher, and she disappeared November 7th, 1969. If you think Making a Murderer and those kinds of series, that's very much what this sets itself up as being. You're talking to a journalist who has been working on the case, if you like, for many years. And all of the 7 episodes, I think it's 7, isn't it? All of the episodes are talking to lots of people related in some way to being in or around that high school, the night in question, but also the events, the town, and particularly the Catholic Church that surrounds it. It's quite a gripping beginning, I would say. Let's find out from the people who've watched episode 1. Mel.
Yes.
Is it gripping?
It is gripping. I was a little miffed that I had to stop it for the first episode, but I promised I did.
Well done. Well done. And how would you describe that beginning, that first episode, for people who haven't seen it?
It introduces a lot of suspicious characters. It introduces a couple of women who are investigating they were students of Sister Kathy's, who are investigating this cold case. I really like that dynamic, and watching them work is interesting, especially the one that they describe as the bulldog, who is out there to get answers. Watching her interview people is... I'm taking some notes.
Of course, I'm sorry.
For my own job.
Yeah, I should have mentioned that there's kind of two retirement age ladies who have taken the case upon themselves as well, and are really working very hard to find out what happened, and they're fascinating characters. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. I have a lot of suspicions, and I'm refraining from going to Wikipedia to look up anything about this, because I don't want to spoil it, but I'm dying to know.
Don't.
Have if they find anything by the end of this first season.
Jack, have you done any spoiling work on this on the internet or anything?
No, I did think about it, but I can give you a quick one-word review from me.
Here we go.
Boring.
Oh my lord. Oh my god. How can
and it also
exploded? It's because nothing.
It took me up until the opening credits to work out if it was a drama or an actual documentary or not, if what I was watching was just an act.
Does that kind of thing make
fumbling about in his attic?
And that makes you very angry, does it? I can't work out what this is. I'll throw a paint can on the wall.
Look, the fourth it wall's was... painted. Awesome.
It was so heavily slow. The story, the actual crime itself is quite interesting, but the tell, Jesus Christ. There's about 15 minutes of one of the elderly lady saying, and this is my Facebook page, and if I post this on here, then every... And I'm sat there thinking, I've had Facebook since I was 14 years old. I know what happens if you post something on the bloody Facebook page. And she's there explaining it and saying, oh, and all these guys start private messaging me. Oh, Jesus Christ. It was a slow hour for me, honestly.
Well, your Wi-Fi is as bad as Jamie's, I must say, as well. Yeah, okay, slow pace. Jamie, slow pace?
Well, it's interesting that Mel says you don't want to know what happens.
I do, but I don't.
Episode 2, quite a lot is introduced in episode two.
Oh my God, above. Can I just say, hosting this podcast tonight, it's a little bit like having trying to hold on to four rubber dinghies in a gale, and everyone who sat in those rubber dinghies are all pissed.
My Wi-Fi is fine.
Mel's sounds great. It's just got the usual slight delay to America and back. But Jamie, carry on.
I'm not on Wi-Fi. I'm just going to put Wi-Fi on. See if that's better.
Oh, just oh God.
Let's try that. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. Yeah, yeah.
Hear me now.
So, what were you trying to say? You don't. What are you saying? Mel doesn't want to.
It's Facebook page all over again, isn't it, Jack?
Let me cut back in. Now, Mel said, was trying to say about the idea that she's the one, you know, you don't want anything to be spoilt for you. And it's kind of weird because for me, I already know after two episodes that I kind of know what's going to come of this. Like, I know. Because it's a real life documentary, and it's in the same mold of Making a Murderer and many sort of podcast documentaries into sort of cases of mystery like this that I've listened to recently. And I kind of know, I'm guessing here, I've not watched it all, but I'm guessing that there's no conclusion to it. I'm guessing that we don't get the conclusion and the answers that we ultimately want. I feel like I'm already disappointed in the ending. I already kind of feel like I'm going to be disappointed by this show. Even though it's well done, it's a well-made documentary, I'm not motivated to finish it because I feel like I'm probably going to walk away feeling unsatisfied and angry because people probably got away with this.
What a prick. How dare you judge the... I mean, this is the death of a death of a nun, and you have the cheek in the eyes of God to stand here and say that you're not interested in finding out what happened to her because it's going to be a letdown.
It is, though.
Yeah.
It's going to be a letdown. I mean, we know this. I mean, I'm sorry about the nun. God love her. I don't want to see a nun die. And what I really don't want to do is watch a nun's death be investigated with no conclusive evidence of anybody getting done over and imprisoned for her death.
Okay.
I don't know if I can go through that.
So you've seen two episodes.
Yeah.
So
I know all the other stuff as well.
Yeah.
Related to the...
Okay,
which is really, it's really sad as well. Look forward to that, Mel.
This documentary...
What other? What are you talking about? Are you trying not to spoil me?
There's some more plot stuff that is introduced by episode two.
She was pregnant.
No. There was... if this documentary... was called what this documentary is actually about, you probably wouldn't watch it. We probably wouldn't have pressed play on it. But after episode one, this documentary takes a turn and does become about something else. It's not quite a detective hunt it's not just a detective hunt. And in that case, Jamie, you are kind of wrong. Now, I'm not suggesting that somebody gets locked up for this because, like you say about all these documentaries, there kind of wouldn't be a documentary, would there, unless you have, like, in The Jinx, unless you have the moment where Robert Durst is burping into a microphone. But I think you kind of do have that in this. It's not as kind of flared and... It's not as explosively lucky as the Jinx documentary had, but it does, I think, that you are left with some definite opinions about things at the end of the series. And
I have opinions now, so...
Do you?
So do I.
Oh, really? Well, let's find out.
Oh, really? Yeah, go on.
Actually, I'm not sure where we stand legally when it comes to a real documentary. If you two are about to name who you think did it...
I'd like to hear it. Who cares?
probably the person they're talking about, I would imagine.
If they go after every person who has an opinion about who did it,
exactly.
Which I'm assuming, by the way, that you're talking, that we don't know by the end of this set of episodes.
All right, well, as long as you preface your opinion with, I am personally responsible for this and not the person who uploaded the podcast, that's fine by me.
Howell told me to say,
Yeah.
I think.
go on, tuck in, Mel. What do you think's done?
So, well, this is purely based on the opening credits and the fact that they only show the nun's face and then that one schoolgirl and then the priest. Those are the only close-ups of photos that they really give us. Ooh. Like standalones.
Okay.
So I'm guessing that the schoolgirl was Jane Doe and the priest is the guy who did it.
Okay. Well, Jack, are you thinking the same? You don't know.
I was thinking more the police officer
the one that takes
that,
them
who
on the
takes them
drive.
Yeah, to the well, where
she
they found
says she... has
one
suspicions
of the bodies.
About him,
him.
Yeah. Yeah, and she kind of goes in on him a little bit, and he's sat there in his seat squirming, answering all of her questions. And there's a lot of talk about, you know, they say things like, oh, it's not the murder itself that's the crime, it's the cover-up that's the crime. And that kind of makes me think, oh, maybe, you know, it's more corrupt than it initially seems.
This is a documentary about what is being covered up in that world. That's what this is about.
Okay. That makes sense.
And there are certainly, if you've got a problem with pace in episode one, Jack, you're going to have a problem with pace in this series. I mean, it's a bit, we were chatting about The Handmaid's Tale around pace a lot last week, and yeah, you could say that a sort of similar thing. It's a knowingly, steadily paced thing. And I think when you see more of it, you'll see why it's steadily paced. Because you get some interviews with people and you get details about things which really deserve to be heard and aren't very comfortable in the listening, but are really powerful. And and by the end of the series, it really kind of makes you think about a lot of things. This is what I was hoping we could do tonight. I thought there might be somebody else who's watched the whole thing, and I was going to do a spoiler split halfway through the episode. But we will see. It becomes something so different from what you think it is that we're definitely going to have to return and talk about it. And I would say that that's the number one reason to carry on, really, is to say, you know, it's yeah, it just takes such a dog leg. And you're on that dog leg now, Jamie, I think.
Yeah, it's not a dog leg I'm particularly enjoying either. It's a very depressing, withered dog. and it's not an enjoyable dog to be spending much time staring at. So, I mean, you know, that's a hard thing. Like, episode two is very heavy. In fact, it's extremely heavy. Mm. Like, it gets intense. And it was like, we watched it. We watched the first one and we were like, oh, we're going to watch the second one. And we watched the second one, we were like, I don't know if I can watch the third one for a while now.
Yeah.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that you think it's bad TV.
Oh, God, no, it's not bad. It's not, I mean, I'm surprised. Did you like Making the Murderer at all?
Jack, Mel?
Jack? Jack?
Well, I liked Making the Murderer, yeah. It wasn't my favourite thing to watch, but I thought it had more pizzazz about it and more of a... more that, it was just better, Making a Murderer. I don't think the story necessarily wasn't as good as this. It is the story that interests me in this. But
I suppose the pace is quite similar, though. I thought the pace...
I remember Making a Murderer being a lot better, probably, than it was, to be honest. I found the same with The Jinx as well. I remember The Jinx, six episodes long. I think I watched episode 1, 2, 3, and then just went straight to episode 6.
well, yeah, I mean, obviously, I always have this difficulty talking about real crime stuff on the podcast. It always feels a bit odd, especially when we start going, it's not got much pizzazz. But but it is kind of... I understand what you're saying completely. You see, what Making a Murderer has as a story is a great deal of action. So in the first episode of Making a Murderer, he's actually been to prison once and been set free and been arrested again. So there's like a lot of source material, if you like, to get through in that first episode. This is different from that. And this is a potentially, just like in Making a Murderer. I mean, did you get pleasure in Making a Murderer from the feeling that you're watching a documentary that's bringing to light corruption?
Yeah, to an extent. I feel like it went off a little bit towards the end. From what I feel like they bit off more than they could chew with the young lad. Is it Brendan Dassey?
Yeah.
That just kind of dragged on a little bit for me at the end. But the main guy, I can't remember his name now, that interested me in the way that the police had covered things up and potentially planted evidence. That was interesting. That's what made me want to carry on.
Okay, well, this is about a cover-up. So whilst the episode Jamie's watched is the heaviest that he'll watch in the series, so I'll say that, episode 2 is going to suddenly smack you round the face. It's not going to feel slow. It's going to feel, holy shit, what have we just, oh my God, right? And then you're going to get more and more into the frustrations of power covering things up or controlling people. And I think it becomes something that everybody who's ever visited a Catholic church should watch. Everyone who's ever put a pound in or a dollar in a donation box in a Catholic church should watch it. Not because I'm saying they shouldn't put a pound in the donation box, just because I think they should demand that their money is well spent if they do. It's one of the most brave and exposing documentaries that I think I've ever seen. And yet, wow. it's still... You will not get away from the fact, Jack, that you will go, oh, it could be a bit quicker, this. It could be a bit quicker. but it's phenomenal. I mean, we watched them pretty much back to back, and there did come a point where it was like, especially after that episode 2, Jamie, where we were like,
yeah,
whoa, this is heavy. Let's just keep going and like get completely miserable and get it past us kind of thing. but there are absolutely lots of kind of moments. And I think that you will end up with a very clear idea, not just about who did the murder, but I think you'll end up with a clear idea about what went on and the kinds of things that go on around the world, actually. I think it's really, it's really exposing and interesting like that. But I do think this is a fascinating one because it kind of does set itself up. What you guys have seen so far, it really does set itself up as Making a Murderer and then becomes something really disturbing, I think.
Wow. Yeah, it definitely takes a turn in another direction that's also dark. But maybe, and I think because the direction it turns in is just very harrowing, and in a lot of ways it's just such a heavy material, it's hard to continue. And I just feel like, because it's real life things don't get resolved in a 7-episode series usually, and you know that these women are still investigating. And the women are really captivating, like the two nuns who are trying to investigate this murder.
They're not nuns.
Really, like, were they not ex-nuns?
No, they're students. They were students.
Oh, students. They're great, you know. They're like, brilliant protagonists, sort of taking the story forward. It's just that I'm gonna carry on. I need to just be ready for some heavy shit to follow again. And that's a hard... And it's also knowing that, like, I don't think the bad people are going to get caught here. And I'm kind of sick of that at the moment. I've got fatigue for justice not being served at the moment.
That must be really hard for you.
It is, Howell.
This is kind of
as the non-victim, that must be tough for you.
Must be horrible.
It is.
If only you could bury your head in the sand and not pay any attention to any of this, wouldn't that be better?
That's what I'm thinking of doing.
Yeah, which is kind of my point with Jack. You know, Jack, the voice of ignorant youth, wandering in here and He wants it to be an exciting movie. He couldn't even work out whether it was a movie or not. And I think this is one of the issues with these documentaries is they have to both hold us and be excellent storytelling. But they also are dealing with real subjects. And one of the things that I felt uncomfortable with Making a Murderer, that I thought Serial dealt with much better, was a real sense of the pain caused to the victims involved. So, you know, when you watch Making a Murderer and the victim's family spoke, they almost became the villains of the piece, didn't they? Because they were so brainwashed in our eyes. They were so brainwashed by the police sergeant that you're going, how can you stand up there and defend this? Ooh, that was nice. How can you stand there and defend this prosecutor? Yeah. And we're all like, "Are you dick about the girl who died's brother?" And in a way, there's a responsibility. Okay, so the program has to grab us in with an intriguing beginning and everything. But then when you hear what you hear in episode two, when you have an actual real person tell you something that's real and horrible, I think that's partly why I really, really like this series, because it made me wake up to the fact that this is a serious, horrible subject matter that all of us should not be treating as popcorn entertainment. You know, is there like a responsibility for you to carry on with it after episode two, Jamie?
Yeah, but I mean,
I'm so intrigued now.
This must be really tantalizing for you two. I mean, I don't feel like I'm treating it. I don't treat it like a popcorn. I'm not treating it like it's got to be basic entertainment like you get on a normal Netflix show. I'm just sort of, I've watched a lot of documentaries similar to this, and I've watched movies that are similar to this. I can't mention them because it might spoil stuff. And this kind of theme, this plot, this issue that it highlights, I've watched a lot of material about this, and I find it really sad that in a lot of the cases there's not a lot of justice that comes from it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah, I'm not saying you're a bad person. I'm just saying by the nature of us putting these things on, it's almost like let's just say we're dealing with two different types of crime in this documentary, and it's almost like you have bought your ticket at the beginning for one type of crime, and then it becomes as well about another type of crime, and you go, oh, well, in which case I've got compassion fatigue for this. And he's like, I'm not saying you're a bad person. I'm saying...
Feels like you are, Howell.
Maybe. No, maybe I'm saying you and we're all the same with this. It's just like there's a whole argument about whether compassion fatigue is something that we should ever give in to, you know, when another bomb goes off after the Manchester one and we all pay less attention to it, you know. That's... I'm not saying there's a right or wrong with that. I just think we are, by nature, when we put on our TV, we are looking for entertainment and or something that interests us and educates us, perhaps. And what this one does better than Making a Murderer is give us something really real, which is quite uncomfortable. But I'm quite glad that they do, and I think that the people who are involved with it, the people who talk, are hugely brave for doing so, and we kind of owe it to them to watch the rest of it, you know.
Yeah, I do get that. It is just the case of I've seen a lot of materials like similar to this, certainly similar to the episode two, and it's just it's very sad, and I am willing to continue. I just need a run up, and I also feel like I'm going to just come away angry from it as well. A lot like, you know, I imagine it, there's no other way to feel about this stuff. But it's worth, you know, I'm going to continue with it.
I think it is
going to be hard.
I think everyone's going to walk away from it angry. I think that's definitely the case. But I think there's a difference between this and Making a Murderer, which will be interesting to see if you agree with when you've finished, which is with Making a Murderer, you kind of get the feeling if you'd have watched that at any point in the last 5 years, nothing much will have changed in terms of the system. There's not much that can be changed. Maybe Obama can put a bit of pressure on this governor, and maybe Brendan might get released or whatever. But generally, it's kind of, you know, not going to change much. This The Keepers is really new. It's only been out a month or two. And there are some characters directly involved with it who you think this is not about a political system. This is about corruption in a different form, and it's going to... it's going to cause shockwaves. Something will happen as a result of this documentary growing in popularity. And I think that those women, you end it and you think, you know, unlike Making a Murderer, I think you end this and you think our heroes are going to get some justice as a result of this. But it's going to take all of us to sort of get involved a bit and back them up and stuff, you know. There's a bit more hope.
Well, I think the thing with Making the Murderers is there is sort of like there is some justice getting made from the groundswell, isn't there? Because I think there's a real... is Brendan Dassey been released? I think he was.
He has.
And I think that the idea that, you know, enough people pay attention to this, but I think that the topic in episode two... sorry, people, I watched it again. But the topic in episode two is a largely covered topic by a lot of different, you know, a lot of different mediums have covered it in film and in other documentaries. I've covered this topic in great detail and investigated it.
I don't think it has. I think you're wrong there. I think there's been a lot, but I don't think anything compared to murder. I can name maybe three documentaries.
Well, I'm not talking about the murder. I'm talking about...
I know. That's what I'm saying. Compared to the number of things that we've seen in drama or documentaries about murder, this subject is not largely watched by people because it's so uncomfortable.
I don't know. I've watched a lot of stuff about this particular subject in this particular theme as well, like this systematic, what's going on. I've watched a lot of stuff about this, and I think that... it's an area that's been covered a lot, but I'm not saying it shouldn't be covered because of that. I'm just saying that it's a material that, you know, there's a lot. I think there's a lot of outrage that has been caused already over the last 10 years by this particular topic. But anyway,
let me ask you, what do you think the title's about then? Why are you think it's called The Keepers?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Ooh.
Any ideas from Lancaster or Kansas?
The Keepers of Secrets, right?
That's right. The Keepers of Secrets. What were you going
to
say?
I think that's the reason why I thought it was going to be a drama. For some reason, I thought it was going to be some kind of horror, poltergeist, insidious kind of thing. And when I saw that it was being recorded by a handheld camera, that's when I thought, oh, for Christ's sake, you know, what am I watching now?
Well, the cover art doesn't do it any favours in that sense. I don't think it does look like a poltergeist sort of cover.
Yeah, and that's initially what did it put me in a bad mood, thinking I've now got to sit and watch an hour of this, and then these two women popped up and started telling me about Facebook. Yeah, maybe I wasn't in the right mindset to watch it. I think I will watch episode two, but I feel like I need a run up just to episode two, so God knows I'm going to feel after episode two.
I'll be fascinated to hear what are your thoughts after episode two. I think that's going to be very, very interesting.
Yeah, and in a way, I think it's hard for you two to judge at the moment because, in a way, the first two episodes are almost like one episode, in that gives the whole picture of what they're investigating, really, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Is it Howell or...?
Yeah, it does. I mean, there's lots of kind of surprises and new characters and stuff that come along later. But yes, yeah,
it's actually one of those shows that you can't even really judge after one episode. And
really well made though. The guy who made it hasn't really got a voice in it. You hear him a couple of times towards the end, but you've probably noticed there's no narrator. It's very well put together, I think. Good documentary filmmaking, but certainly again one of those things, the new world of TV people are really being allowed to make things the length that they want, and I don't necessarily think that that's the right thing every time. It's like, okay, cut a bit more. There's music throughout almost all of it. There's kind of a score that plays throughout the whole thing. But they're criticisms that are worth ignoring. I think it's a phenomenon. Is there anything else we can talk about with that? I mean, Mel, you must have figured out what the subject is that gets raised.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Jack, have you? He's a bit stupid, Jack, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely no idea.
Right, okay.
I'm guessing having watched Spotlight is gonna set me up to understand some things, yeah.
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 Have you watched Spotlight, Jack?
No.
Okay.
Why not? Oh, you know what?
Is it a film?
It is a what? Of course it's a film.
Great film, Oscar winning film.
Last year.
Michael Keaton, Mark Ruffalo, Rachel McAdams.
List of names.
But you know what else? It is a bunch of writers. It's investigative journalism again.
Yes,
I think
it is.
Jack's bias.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, Jack doesn't like the real world too much yet because he doesn't understand it.
Yeah, it's investigating journalism. It's very difficult to turn that into something visually compelling.
Yeah.
I'm a writer. I'm not an investigative journalist, but I am a journalist, and it's not something that people want to sit and watch all day, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, no, there's not a lot of a journalist in episode two. Okay. Maybe we should draw a line now, and maybe we should discuss what happens in episode two.
What? I mean, would you two rather watch it, though, than
I'm ready to hear it. I'm ready to hear it.
Realistically.
I am 100% watching, and I pretty much spoiled it already.
I think once we say what Mel knows already, I think Mel is likely to carry on. Jack is less likely to carry on watching it. But let's give it a go. If you are not interested in hearing what happens in episode two, turn off now. Reach for your device. Press pause. Go back and listen to an episode of this where we perhaps talked about Wayward Pines. Goodbye. So, episode two. Jack, so what do you know about the Catholic Church and its wrongdoings?
Oh, I think I might have just figured it out, actually.
Wow, Sherlock.
Well, welcome to the show.
And the rosary bead drops.
It makes more sense now you put it like that.
So they've made it clear, haven't they? Even though you weren't really watching it, you were on your phone, clearly, in episode one. they have said, to catch you up, that this is much about the cover-up, and it's at a Catholic high school. So what the nun knew kind of thing, right? And we know that there's been probably billions of cases of child abuse in the Catholic Church, covered up and performed by priests, mostly, I would imagine. Well, that's potentially what she knew about. That's what we're getting into in episode two. So what was happening at that school in the 1960s, 70s? And in episode two, you meet an ex-student, an ex-pupil who's never spoken on camera before about a particular one of the head priests in the school. And she talks at great length about what that priest made her do.
Yeah, and the woman who does this, she's amazing. Like, the way how she's able to tell this story is incredible. Like, she's just so brave and it's so, like, compelling and so horrific to hear it from her first-hand account of exactly what she went through. It's just totally shocking, even though you kind of know what's coming to an extent, just hearing her talk about her experiences. And then more women come forward with you hear sort of abuses that they suffered at the hands of this particular priest and another one. There was two of them.
Yeah, and like you say, the way that they speak, the way that she speaks about it, is like both fascinating. Jamie's covered the bravery and all that on a personal level. It's amazing, but as an interview, but again, because the director's voice isn't involved, you are just looking into the eyes of this woman who is telling you things that happened to her, and it's amazing. Like, it's really unique. I haven't seen that in a documentary before. I've seen lots of documentaries about the subject, like you say, Jamie. I don't think I've seen a victim sit and just talk about the horrible things that were done to them.
You never hear from the victims, usually because they're so young, or they were so young that they can't really articulate it.
Yeah.
They don't remember it well. You know, it was so traumatic.
Yeah.
But in this case, it's teenager, right?
Yeah, she was teenager. But part of the story in this is about court cases and how people remember things and when they remember them and statute of limitations. Do you know what a statute of limitations is, Jack?
No, fill me in.
Let's say you committed a crime when you were four. Mm-hmm. You stole someone's paint, red paint, right? if you then got found out to have stolen that paint when you were 21, it might be that the statute of limitations on theft is 7 years, and you couldn't then be convicted for that crime at the age that you're at now.
Oh, okay.
So no matter how hard you try and paint over that red paint, there's no need, because you can't be arrested for it, right?
Okay.
So there's all sorts of things to do with child abuse that is related to that. If you add those things, don't replace the murder of Kathy with those things. If you just add those things to the pot of what is going to unfold in a very conversational, interview-led sort of documentary, that's what you're dealing with for the rest of this series, I think. Mm. And it's like I said at the beginning, if I said, hey everyone, we're going to next week on the podcast, we're going to review a documentary called Sexual Abuse in the Catholic Church, I don't think many people would have turned up to review this today. I don't think I would have ever watched it. I don't think Jamie would have picked it up and watched it. And so in a way, this compassion fatigue stuff, and Jamie's obviously watched more of child abuse than we have, but sorry, on the subjects of child abuse than we have. But,
yeah, get there.
But you know what I'm saying. But maybe that's partly why I'm really glad they began with Kathy Sesnick's death, because it did take me into a subject which, if I'm being 100% honest, I would never have pressed play on. And it made me press play on it. And I'm really glad it did, because I always knew there was kind of cover-ups and stuff. But when you begin to see the system at work, not the political system, but... well, partly the political system, but how it interacts with the church system, it's really eye-opening stuff. More likely or less likely to carry on now, Jack?
Probably a little bit more likely, but I still feel like I need to take a bit more of a run-up to episode two.
What is this run-up thing? Why do you keep talking about a run-up?
It's a great saying. Yeah. Great phrase.
What does that mean?
Because episode one was so bloody boring. That's why. Well, all you have I'm going to be completely honest.
Yeah, okay. Well, just finish this podcast and press play on episode two. Turn your phone off. Turn the volume up. Just get in. You know, you've got to join the pace. Join the pace. See what happens.
Does the second murder from the first episode, does that play a part in episode two? Is that kind of, because I didn't really understand at the time why they brought that in, unless it was going to play a big part in the nun's death.
It's all going to, where Making a Murderer held your hand, the documentary makers held your hand really clearly through everything. This doesn't do that as much. It all comes back. It all comes in and out of each other, so that you're kind of trying to figure out what's going on and putting the pieces together. It's not pretentious in that way. By the time you get to the end, I think you'll have a clear idea of what you think happened. But yeah, all of that stays. You're right. They've not brought anything up that isn't relevant.
Okay.
There's still questions. What about you, Mel? Are you going to You're going to watch episode two now?
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to put things together. And after one episode, I'm trying to make speculations that are probably going to be turned on their head.
Yeah.
But no, this is the kind of thing that I really, when I have the time for it and when it's compelling, I enjoy quite a bit. So.
Yeah. Well, it is definitely compelling. And, you know, it's the secret of any heavy subject or any specialist subject is to unlock it with something else, isn't it? And that's what this does. But it certainly doesn't all of a sudden, you don't all of a sudden go, oh, I've been sold a bum deal here. It does come back.
No, because,
it's quite striking.
I definitely had suspicions before I even started that it would involve some form of abuse.
Yeah,
so I was aware that was probably going to be part of the plot line. One of the things that I was referencing as well when I was trying to talk about what else I've watched similar not that long ago was there's an Alex Gibney documentary about abuse in the Catholic Church, and that's actually told from the true story of four young deaf men who were abused by a priest, and that story of them trying to get justice. And so, you know, I've seen kind of a similar journey, I imagine, to the one that I'm going to follow quite recently. So it wasn't that I was never going to watch it again or finish it, but I didn't feel the urge to go straight back into this subject matter.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad it's on Netflix. I'm glad it's on a massive platform because of what it is. But, I'll just say this now. Don't try and figure out what this means because you won't. There is a moment in this that I'll just say the boat. So if anyone is listening to this who've watched it all, a boat is mentioned. Don't try and work this out. It's not abuse that happens on a boat or anything like that. It's not going to make any sense of you two. But there's just a sentence that happens later on, something to do with the boat. And that's when you really go, what the fuck have the Catholic Church been doing all these years? Like,
Should I tell you the thing that I suspect a little bit, just back to the murder side of things? Mm. We were talking about who you suspect. I kind of suspected the boyfriend, her boyfriend a little bit.
He was the first person that they showed in the documentary. He was the first person, apart from the journalist, who they spoke to. And I instantly thought, like you, I bet he's a suspect. Mm.
Yeah,
the nun's boyfriend.
Yeah, he was a priest as well, wasn't he? The one who proposed to her.
We haven't got to that part yet.
Yeah, you have.
Haven't you? Is that episode one?
I don't think we haven't. No.
Oh, okay. Well,
I had my suspicions.
Forget that.
The friend, they became very good friends. That guy.
Yeah, that guy.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
I thought so.
Well, he's
that seemed awfully odd that he was like, "Yes, let me come right over at midnight." Figure out what happened to her.
Yeah, so. There are. I mean, it's just a really well titled show. This, because there are so many characters that you haven't met yet in so many walks of this thing, that every single person involved has kept a secret of some kind. It's not just about abuse. It could be about anything. It could be about something that their uncle said to them once, which suddenly implicates that person in her death or whatever. It's like the overwhelming thing of this documentary by the end is really going, look what happens when we keep secrets. Like, don't keep secrets. Just don't do it. Just get it all out there. You know, within reason, Jack, whatever those stains are on your wall. Keep it easy. But it's really well titled documentary. It's really good about all that. And this woman is just amazing. The one who speaks, who you're about to see speaking, is just...
She's fascinating to listen to. Amazing.
And she tells it you in an adult way. You don't sit and vomit.
No.
And you don't sit there and cry in a way. It's kind of just... there is how anybody ever could not have believed her is beyond, it's beyond any doubt. It's really,
and it's also she's really good at explaining how you allow this abuse to happen to yourself, like how they control you and how you just assume that where you would tell someone you wouldn't go back there, and she explains she's very good at portraying, you know, putting across her mindset at that particular point in her life, and how they psychologically how they controlled these girls, and it's really, yeah, it is very gripping, and I'm definitely, it's one of the, you know, it's a really well made documentary, and I am, you know, I'm definitely sort of fascinated by how it is going to go. I just know that I'm going to probably be very frustrated by the process by the end of it.
I think you'll be frustrated by everyone, because I'm amazed about what you've just said, having only watched episode two, because actually in terms of this woman as well, there are times in this documentary when you kind of shout at her for blaming herself or whatever. The power of the church on every single level to make the victims feel more and more like liars or like the guilty party is just amazing. I mean, I'm so glad I watched it, because any doubts in my mind about kind of cover-ups and how they work and how sexual abuse works, really, like any of that stuff, is just... it's made me, again, because someone's looking in my eyes and talking about it, because it's been done in this way, in this sort of first-person style, I think it's going to raise the awareness of lots of people of what abuse means and how it works and how you should stand up for it, against it, sorry. You know.
What surprises me is it hasn't actually had much publicity. And yeah, I've heard of a few people about it now, so yeah.
I was going to ask about that, because earlier you were talking about, you know, any action being taken over this. Mm. And I remember after, I haven't watched Making a Murderer, but I remember afterward there was a huge public, at least here in the U.S., there was a lot of publicity about it, and, you know, updates on the guy being retried and, you know, all this evidence. Same with Serial.
Yeah, I just wonder how long...
And I've not heard about anything for this. Well, this we've is... got other things that we're focused on.
This has only been out like a month, though, hasn't it? Like a month and a couple of weeks or something. So,
so
I imagine, yeah, it needs to reach a critical mass, I would imagine, before the news networks pick it up. But as soon as somebody does...
Well, we're about to go into a recess for Congress.
Right.
And they've just now delayed voting on the Senate health care bill, thank God.
Oh, have they?
Because they don't have the votes. So they've shelved it until after the July 4th recess. So maybe it'll be slow news, and the news networks will decide that they need to focus on child abuse scandals in the Catholic Church again.
Maybe.
We just, but the thing is, you were talking about compassion fatigue. We just went through that when Spotlight was having its awards run a year and a half ago.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah. They might just be like, oh, here's another one.
I think it's so fascinating, though, with Spotlight. It's the cover up happened a long time ago, right? It's set in the past. This is not set in the past. The further into this documentary you get, it's not set in the past. So what makes it.
The cover up is taking place while the documentary's being made then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's still, you know, the people involved, apart from some key people, the people involved, the investigation is still going on. And you get the feeling at the end of this that the documentary makers have really helped the detectives actually.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Well, I'm fascinated, and I definitely want to discuss it once I've finished it. However, I have to interview somebody in 3 minutes.
Right. Well, it's time to go anyway. I feel like it's been a bit of a heavy, slightly boring one tonight, and I'd like to blame that one on Jack entirely. So join us again next week. Jack, I want to know what you think of episode two when you've watched it.
Okay.
So next week is what again? What are we doing next week?
Week off next week.
Week off. A week off next week. So we've ended on a damp squib.
are we having the week off because you guys are celebrating American independence from Great Britain?
I would like to say that's why. The truth is I am spending the night recording an exciting adventure comedy musical that I've been writing for 2 years. So That's what I'll be doing.
Are you pulling my leg?
No, it's happening.
Wow. Howell, that's exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting. There's a potential that it has to be cancelled last minute, so we might end up doing a podcast, but watch this space. So, yes, and after that, we'll be back with Glow. Is this correct?
Glow. New Fargo
after that. So watch the first episode of that. Ewan McGregor starring in it twice. You'll see what I mean. And we've got Glow after that. And then we're going to do Vikings with Ray, who is the listener who emailed us and said that we should do Vikings. So we're going to lay the gauntlet down at Ray's feet. Yes.
Bring it, Ray. Bring it.
Bring it. And Mel is going to miss a couple of those because she's going to be on flights to and from Comic-Con.
Yes. Oh. Glow and Vikings both. I do have someone that I'd like to pitch you for Vikings, but her travel schedule may be the same as mine. So,
Mel, if you get Wi-Fi on the plane, get your Skype on your phone and get on the podcast. That'd be amazing.
Yeah.
That could be very interesting indeed. I'll see
great.
What I can do.
It'd be like Jack with the ducks. In fact, it'll probably beat Jack and the ducks.
I don't know if anything can beat Jack with the ducks.
No.
Okay, guys, I have to sign off. We've got to go call.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye. See you later.
Bye.
You. Bye. Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Goodbye. Go, Jack. Everyone else is gone. I'm going to share something with you. Halfway through that podcast, I accidentally made a little bottom burp. And so if anyone's listening to this who think they heard one, it's true. And I didn't admit it.
Accidentally?
Well, how much is it ever accidental? Yeah?
You just thought you could get away with it.
I thought I had no choice.
If there's one thing that my family and friends know me for, it's being an amazing gift giver. I owe it all to Celebrations Passport from 1-800-Flowers.com, my one-stop shopping site that has amazing gifts for every occasion. With Celebrations Passport, I get free shipping on thousands of amazing gifts. And the more gifts I give, the more perks and rewards I earn. To learn more and take your gift giving to the next level, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Ha 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 ha.